Welcome to the Everything ECU podcast. I'm your host, Carla Ward, and I have three incredible guests joining me today from the EduCare team. EduCare is a national network of early childhood champions in the United States. It comprises comprehensive early care and education programs, partnering with historically disinvested urban, suburban, rural, and tribal communities to transform the lives of thousands of young children nationwide. With 25 schools located across the U.S., the EduCare Network's mission is to advance quality early learning through partnerships and innovation around practice, policy, and research, so every child can thrive, with a vision of ensuring every family has equitable access to quality early care and education in their community, promoting positive outcomes for generations to come. Today's team shares the importance of research and a research agenda that they have developed in order to address the opportunity gap and truly advance racial equity. I'm so excited you're here with me today to be a part of this very important conversation and to learn alongside me. Let's dive in. Welcome to the show. Let's start by having you each introduce yourselves and your role at EduCare.
All right. I am Iyoma Iruka, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am a national evaluation partner through the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill at the Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute.
And my name is Cynthia Jackson, and I'm the executive director of the EduCare Learning Network at Start Early.
Hi, my name is Amanda Stein. I'm the managing director of research and evaluation at Start Early. And Start Early houses the national coordinating office for the EduCare Learning Network. I've been with EduCare for over 12 years now, previously as a local evaluation partner for our flagship school, EduCare Chicago, and currently as the lead of our research team on that national coordinating office. I support our research practice partnerships throughout the network.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for coming on. I feel a bit like I'm fangirling over here because I feel like a bit like a fish out of water because, you know, research in our industry is so, so important. And it's something that on the ground level in education as educators, we do it through professional development, but we're not diving in, frankly, because in my opinion, most of us don't have time or don't make the time to go to that next level of research. And it's important to, you know, speak to people like you who are, you know, doing groundbreaking work and then sharing with us and reminding us that how important that research is. So thank you so much for coming on. I greatly appreciate it. And first question is, let's talk about your current research project, your current initiative that you are doing.
Well, I want to start by giving you just a little information about EduCare overall. And the first EduCare was created in Chicago in 2000. And when it was created in 2000, embedded in that was a research focus in the early childhood space. So providing high quality early learning to children from birth to 5 years old and engaging their families. We also wanted to be innovators in this space and add the use of continuous quality improvement through use of data into EduCare. Since we opened the first one in 2000, there are now 25 schools across the country. They are public-private partnerships, and so partnerships are really critical. And you might have heard Amanda talking about her role as leading the research program partnerships for the network overall. Our mission, really, as the National EduCare Network, is really to advance quality early learning. And we do this in the area of practice, policy, and research so that every child could thrive. And our vision is that every family has equitable access to quality early learning, education, and communities. Most EduCares, all EduCares, are located in diverse communities, typically those that have been historically under-resourced or disinvested in. And so that is really where our commitment to this work comes in from the very beginning. We want to provide high-quality early learning in communities that typically might not have them. So we have a commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And we really want to focus on coherence across the network in our research efforts. And because of the locations that we are in 15 states, D.C., and on tribal land, we serve a very diverse population. So it's critical that we invest our time and our expertise in really understanding what are the systems, structural barriers, systematic racism, bias, racism overall, that impact our children, our families, and our staff that work in these communities. So that's kind of the genesis of where our focus is on our research agenda. And I want to, you know, really turn it over to both Ioma, our researcher at our national partner level, and then Amanda, our researcher at the National Coordinating Office also. But to really just set that framework for you. And we've been working on this issue for almost 10 years now. This is not something new. It seems like everybody's jumping on the bandwagon now, but we've been walking in the space, I would say pretty gently, for about 10 years. And then over the last 2 years, have really doubled down on how research needs to play a larger role in dismantling racism and bias across the populations that we're working with.
Absolutely. And I think part of it is because there's so much, especially in a world of social media, there's so many blips of things. We see little pictures of things, but when you back it up with research, we can go so much deeper. And with research comes understanding. So we're not just saying things for the sake of saying things. We're saying things because something needs to change.
I'll jump in real quickly, but I do want Amanda to talk a little bit more in detail about sort of the research agenda, really the racial equity research agenda. But I will just flag that, you know, when I think about the Educator Network, right, is more than sort of what I call initiative, right? Because if I think about sort of the influence it has, right, it has influence on sort of our, one of our major federal programs called Head Start. And so the fact that, you know, some of the public partners for Educare schools are often Head Start, and being able to influence sort of our federalized really early child program to both think about research writ large, and we see more of that coming into play, but also to really, you know, confront the history of early care education, particularly around Black communities, and really, as Cynthia said, underrepresented, under-resourced communities, and how do we make sure that early care education really, I think, delivers on the promise of really trying to provide, you know, high quality program for children, families, and the communities that they live in. So I feel like I think of it more than an initiative, but really as really trying to foster a much stronger and vibrant sort of education system. But I would love to, you know, pass it to Amanda to talk a bit more about the research agenda, and then I can add more to that as she finishes up.
So I will start by sharing kind of some of the key goals of our research agenda, and then we can talk a little bit more about how we're kind of operationalizing and implementing and what it looks like to be living out this research agenda to advance racial equity. So some of the key goals of the Educare research agenda to advance racial equity are really to elevate innovative research questions, methods, and practices that have broad-reaching implications for practice, programs, policy, children, and families. We also have the goal in our research agenda to help generate information and data that guide continuous quality improvement and provide both learning opportunities and celebratory opportunities for our network and others in the early childhood field. We also aim through this agenda to impact early childhood care and education by informing practitioners, policymakers, funders, researchers, and advocates about Educare's efforts and findings that show promise for improving access, for improving program quality, and for really resulting in more equitable outcomes for children, families, and the early care and education workforce. And I think one of the ways that we really aim to do that is by making the information that is coming out of our research and evaluation more accessible to a variety of audiences and messaging that information and preparing that information to be shared in a variety of ways that are typical ways where people in those different audiences access that information. So really for the network, we have this network that's racially, ethnically, geographically, and linguistically diverse, as Cynthia was describing earlier, a diverse network of schools and partners, really trying to be a leader in the early care and education field. We feel like our network is well situated to ask and answer both practice and policy-focused research questions, and to apply a strengths-based approach to better understand and engage children and families and support early care and education leaders and staff, especially those from racially marginalized groups. In addition, our network has an existing research and data infrastructure that comprises local place-based research practice partnerships that have a local evaluation partner, and those research practice partnerships also include school leadership, staff, community partners, and families as part of those research partnerships. program partnerships and funders and school district, folks in the school district as well. We also have an infrastructure in the network that includes our national evaluation and our national evaluation partners at Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute. So EOMA is one member of that team, our national coordinating office team, and we have common data collection mechanisms and measures in place that really help to enable the advancement of this agenda. And the work has already begun. As Cynthia said, we've been walking in along this path for 10 years and really deepening our footprints in the space of diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging in the past 2 years. So although our agenda includes sample questions organized into four kind of categories of focus, one is policy and systems, two is programs and professionals, three are communities, families, and children, and four is measurement and data. Although in the agenda, we share some sample questions, that making them sample means that we are allowing for questions, innovations, methods, and measures to be guided by locally and nationally identified priorities and opportunities, and really guided by the cultural assets and self-identified needs of families, practitioners, and communities. So some examples of some recent research questions pursued by the Educare Learning Network include exploring an understanding of the association between racial ethnic match of teachers and children and how that might be related to children's outcomes, and also investigating the role of historical and present day context using indicators of structural inequities and racism at the community level and looking at their association with child outcomes. So really trying to ask some innovative research questions in the field that focus in that space of racial equity. In terms of innovative methods and measures, the network has also been working to measure staff and families' beliefs and practices around children's racial socialization via a survey that all network member schools are involved in, and then analyzing and using these data to guide our programmatic efforts. And we feel like that both of those, that those serve as kind of existing examples of ways that we are trying already to advance and live out this agenda.
That's amazing. And where can people see the results of these measurements? Like, are they accessible to the public? How do we read them? Because I think some people do have a bit of an ostrich with their head in the sand, thinking that, you know, I don't need to read it. I already know the answers. I don't think that's necessarily true. So how do we get our hands on that?
So I'll answer, but Emily, you can feel free to chime in. I'll start off our answer. This is research that's very much in progress, right? It's research that's being submitted through that kind of rigorous peer-reviewed process that research typically needs to go through to have its kind of gold seal of approval, so to speak, by the field of research. But we try to package our research findings in a variety of ways for a variety of audiences. So one is we try to make sure that we are sharing these findings by presenting both research and practitioner-oriented conferences, so professional conferences, and sharing this information with professional associations in the field. So we try to make sure that the early care and education workforce are able to get their hands on our research findings. And we also package many of the research findings in what we call our Educare Insights series. So trying to take findings that have been published in a peer-reviewed academic journal or academic space and translate that information and package that information into publicly available information that's available on the educareschools.org website. And we also, many of our researchers and our practice leaders in the network and our families are lending their voices to sharing their perspective. So they are a mechanism for disseminating and amplifying what we're learning through our research in the network. And I think that's really important. So they're sharing about those research findings and those data in ways that you would typically think of, right? Through a blog post, on their social media, as they're sitting and talking on different committees and work groups at a local, state, and national level as well.
I think that's exactly it, right? Like, as researchers, sometimes you just you put it on behind a paywall and it's not accessible. The language is not accessible. So I think exactly Amanda's point about trying to make sure that it really does reach the masses and it thinks about what are the potential practice implications, what are the policy implications. So for example, a paper focused on sort of the impact of sort of say historical racism, like the enslavement of Black people. What does that mean to child outcomes today, right? it may mean that we have to look at how we fund in certain places, right, that have had a history of being disinvested in or underinvested in. What does that mean for the kind of programming that we provide? So I think a lot of times we're also thinking about what are the meaning. And I think that could operate whether through the different briefs that Amanda mentioned, but also through conversations with various policymakers, both at the national level, at the local level, because you're always having conversations about how do you improve the system of early care education, which there really is not one. And so you're trying to really sort of figure out how can I at least make sure to share the information where it could be activated as quickly as possible in ways that clearly is meaningful. But again, we have to be careful because our researchers, some of the papers are not RCTs, meaning they're not rigorous where we're doing causal sort of assessments, but they're really important to really show the context, to show, you know, how children's development is being impacted through many different mechanisms. And so I think it requires us to do the research, but also hear from our community, from families, from educators, right, about what is it that we're not actually capturing in our research, right? Because a lot of times we think we're capturing it, but we're not. So we're always trying to balance how much do we share out, but also how much do we make sure that we're hearing from those who actually live the actual educator sort of experience.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Carla, about how do we get the information out. We have a 3-year strategic plan that we're working on right now. We're midway through that. We have 3 pillars of that strategic direction. One is exemplify. So we want to exemplify within this network, you know, behaviors, practices, knowledge, skills that exemplify, right, valuing cultural diversity and honoring that, the cultural assets that people are bringing. So we want to exemplify that, share that with others in the early childhood field in a multiple variety of ways. We want to innovate and we want to amplify. So some of our questions back to our field is, what's the easiest way for you to receive this information, right? And what are those channels of distribution? Because we can talk to ourselves within this network all day long, but this strategic direction is requiring us to take a bolder step and be vocal about this and put the information out and have people question what we're studying, what we're finding within our own network, because it's informative to others who think that perhaps they're not operating from a biased perspective or, you know, in these systematic, you know, systems that have been set up, you know, historically that are underserving people and that are biased in the structure. And so we're looking for, you know, additional ways to be able to amplify this and get it out. We've got some smaller memos and briefs, things like that, that we want to get out to people also. So any ideas that you have for us about how to distribute and disseminate this information, we'd love to, you know, hear your thoughts on it. So we're really glad that you, you know, offered to talk to us in this podcast about what we're doing with our research agenda focused on racial equity.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can certainly talk more about how bringing your research to Canada, because Let's face it, it's happening everywhere. Even yesterday, somebody literally wrote on an Instagram post, not in my Canada. And I'm like, I'm sorry, do we live in the same country? So definitely bringing your research over to Canada, bringing it to our institute so that we can basically apply it everywhere, because these messages are so cryptic when they're not backed with research, because they're being embedded with people's opinions. And there's no room for opinion, because racism is alive and well, and it needs to be sorted out, especially because we're working with little ones, like the most innocent of innocent human beings that could ever grace this earth. And they don't need to grow up in a world where they are not treated like they belong. So that's me in my soapbox for a second there. So absolutely, we will start with this podcast and we will definitely discuss more ways to spread the research. But let's talk about why we should care. And I kind of had a little moment there about why, but I think that message sometimes gets lost. What are the results when we take this research seriously? What does that look like for a community when we listen, assess our own biases, and put it into practice?
I mean, so I'm happy to take that first. I'm going to, I already got an answer for that. So I would say, I think first and foremost, right, that we have to understand the research is an enterprise, right? Research in of itself, right? There's a lot of of, I would say, biases built into that. There's a lot of privilege built into that, right? The kinds of things that we measure for child outcomes, some of them are based on eugenics movement, right? So we have some our own work, and I think that's part of the research agenda, is not just doing just work to answer questions about how do we address issues of inequities for Black and Brown children, right, or those living in poverty, but it's also to make sure that we are doing an internal temperature check, right, for the research community and the research enterprise, because we have been, as much as we're part of the solution, we have also been part of the problem, right, because we've created a deficit narrative about, you know, children living in poverty. We create a deficit narrative about what, you know, Black children need because they're culturally, their culture is deprived, and so they need to be filled in with the white majority culture. So part of the work, I will argue, with our work and the research work, is that we have to make sure that we're really fully, as you said, really honoring the full humanity of children, right? Showing that, yes, there are challenges that children, young children have in their families and communities, but there's a lot of strengths that they have, especially for those who are living in marginalized and sort of circumstances, right? If you think about a child who's grown up in poverty in an immigrant, you know, population where there may be, say, you know, raids, right? And the children are still coming to school, right, and still, you know, seem to be engaged. Imagine the amount of cognitive skills and emotion regulation that has to take on a given child who's like 3 or 4 or 48 months, right? And so we need to begin to acknowledge how these contexts are creating children to sort of do more than what we really should force them to do. So our research has to recognize a lot of those additional assets that our children really have and bring to that. And that means that then our intervention could actually respond accordingly. And then we can continue to have better, you know, obviously supports and better, you know, policies and practices, et cetera. So I think in the end of it, when we think about this work of research and racial equity, that it's not just about pushing things out. It's also about the ways that we go about it, right? And part of that, I think, as Amanda said earlier, is how we do include sort of community members, family members, right? Does the question come from the researchers first? Or does it come from the community members, right? So like in one of the sort of the work that we have done within the network is really trying to sort of understand to what extent, right, how much is the environment impacting children, right? Because we're trying to get away from blaming families for X, Y, and Z or blaming teachers for X, Y, and Z, but to really understand what is the role that maybe the environment is having? What is the role that some of the sort of the context of whether it is the policies, whether it's some of the various microaggressions or macro in some instances, how is that impacting sort of children's sort of day-to-day life? And so being able to think through how do we make sure that we engage families, but in a way that doesn't sort of tokenize them and doesn't sort of just say, we just want to get your thoughts and so on and move on. But how do we sort of create a feedback loop? And so you'll see there's some research happening in the network that really tries to do that in a way that really fully honors sort of family's deep contribution in many ways, and also make sure that it actually has an impact on their lives, right? It may not be their lives directly, but at least the lives of families who are living in poverty, who are living in marginalization. So I think that it's still a work in progress, right? Because research, you know, some of us have been trained in particular ways that doesn't actually mean the way it should be. And so it's how do we make sure we're really engaging what we call community-based participatory research, where we're fully authentically engaging with the community, making them sort of think through what are the measures, where are the gaps in our knowledge? What is it that you're doing that we should make sure that we capture? So I think we still are figuring out how to best do that. But I think what's important is that we're committed to doing that and also sharing with the field what we're learning, our mistakes, our journey, and hopefully getting better, because in the science will get better from that lens.
Yeah, I really, you know, like that. Where our research, our national research partners and our local research partners have started with self-examination. And that is so critical and so important, as Ioma said. And I would add to that, that we have the same responsibility for our teaching staff, our family support staff, our leadership staff in this network also, because our typical lean, I think you mentioned, and Carla also is that not in my neighborhood, not in my community. No, not us, right? And there is some recognition that we all carry our biases. We've all been socialized in a particular manner that doesn't align with being, right, an anti-racist, anti, you know, biased organization or network of organizations. And so, you know, part of this work is our responsibility, I think, is to be able to provide people with the knowledge, awareness, self-reflection, understanding of what it is, right? What is racism? What is bias? What is oppression? What are these racist systems that have been set up that we've been socialized to that we need to undo, unpack, reconstruct, right? And so that is part of our goal, is to interrupt this. And you can't do this unless you actually have everybody looking at the same thing, right? And then you're asking the folks that we're interacting with in the various communities, we're asking their teaching staff, all the staff in the schools, the families themselves, when they've experienced, you know, bias or racism or socialization activities that kind of go against who they are. And until we are able to do that as a network and as a collective, right, we totally miss the point. So we've got to, you know, face this issue together and then think about, like, what are the strategies? And I think Amanda mentioned we're kind of early still in this process of collecting the data. And then it isn't just collecting the data. What are the strategies to unravel some of this, right? And give permission for folks to self-examine, but then change their mindset, behaviors, and the way that they interact with one another in a community-based setting, in a school setting, so that we can get beyond, you know, systematic racism and bias. But it's happening. And I'll just add to that, it's happening earlier than people want to admit. And that is the socialization that comes in communities and from families and communities. And so this, you know, for me, when I think about the early childhood population, you know, starting at, you know, we start with 6 weeks all the way through 5 years of age. We have an opportunity very, very early on in these children's lives and in these families' lives to interrupt and disrupt racism and bias. And, you know, if we are successful in this particular, you know, space, I think that that has the potential to be influential for many others to hang on to, latch on to, and learn, you know, from us along with us as well. So I want to just really interject that is the major piece of this, is self-examination and then change.
100%. And in order for, like, as both of you were speaking, I always picture the pendulum in education, right? Like, we are very impulsive because we care. So we want to jump on the next big thing that's going to make this great positive change. But we rush at it head on like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
And we watch the pendulum, and the pendulum swings one way and it stays up there a little bit. But with any pendulum, something else comes along and makes that one come back down. And then we're like, oh yeah, like we were doing that. Like, I remember when growth mindset was a huge coin trick, right? Mm-hmm. We're all on it. We were all doing it. And now, yeah, we know what it is, but do we now interject it into every lesson we do? Probably not the same way we did in 2006. So it's so important to do exactly the way you've laid it out, is we're not running at this head on. We're making sure that the research is there, the program is in place. We're not just throwing something at a wall and hoping it sticks, because it's not, otherwise it's not going to work and we're all going to be back at square one. So this is fantastic. Like, I'm excited to read the research and be a part of the changes that need to happen, for lack of a better word.
When I think, to speak to Ioma's earlier reflection on research as an enterprise, I think one of the key mechanisms that we aren't just going with the trend, right? Or or like sticking with this, is to think about our research practice partnership approach and our participatory approach to research as not doing research on or to children, families, and the workforce, but with, right? And that the way we achieve that longevity, the way we achieve that authenticity, the way we achieve that relevance through our research and evaluation experience, is to embed anti-racism and to include the folks that are the focus of our research and evaluation activities in those research and evaluation activities through every phase of scientific inquiry, from understanding the context, collaboratively identifying key issues and opportunities, unpacking those root causes, to collaboratively co-constructing and co-designing and implementing those research, the research projects, from data collection and analysis and co-interpretation to dissemination. So if we're partnering along the way with the individuals most that are the focus of the research, right, and engaging them in authentic ways, I think it's much more likely to have relevance and to for that evidence base to reach the audiences that we intend with it.
I want to underline sort of that part real quick, and I think it really will connect the circles, right? Is that right? A lot of, you know, early learning, early education, at least here in the States, right? We, you know, the impact of it is usually judged based on some metric, right? So let's take, for example, vocabulary. It's a big metric that we use sometimes to gauge early education. But if you ask families, right, from different racial, ethnic backgrounds, that may not be their top, right? It may not be that. It may be something like being able to be respectful. For teachers, some of them say, you know what, is them being able to sit still and play together well, right? And some will argue too that our assessments themselves, right, vocabulary is like, is this very discrete thing? But are we capturing only standard American English, or are we capturing other kinds of vocabulary? So if you take the outcome, but then the question, especially from the anti-racism research side, is, right, how do you get there? Like, how do you get to whatever the outcome is? And I mean, I know for I'm not gonna get too deep into sort of academic speak, but we think about conceptual framework. Like, well, how do you think a child's vocabulary grows? If you think it solely grows because the mother speaks to the child, and that's the only way. So if a child has low vocabulary, it must be because the parents aren't speaking to the child, right? So if your conceptual framework is often always positioning that the kid is not meeting our standards because the family is totally screwed up, and in essence, our research continues to say that, right, to some extent. But if you actually expand the lens of how do you think vocabulary comes about, it comes about through many different mechanisms. It could be biologically related as well. And is vocabulary the only thing? Are we measuring the correct way? Maybe a kid is not comfortable speaking to somebody who doesn't look like them, sound like them, all those sort of things. And so when you take a much larger landscape of like, are we measuring the right stuff here? Is it measured accurately? And what are we missing about other factors that could be impacting the outcomes we want? And so people understand that you can't just exactly take a silver bullet, like everything's a silver bullet. It's not, right? Children's development really occurs before they're actually born. A lot of development happens before children are born. And a lot of that's impacted by multiple intergenerational things, like lead poisoning, for example, right? So it's important that for our research and the work of anti-racism, that we really begin to take sort of this long arc view, but also a historical view and also a futuristic view, right? Like, where do we want to see our children? What kind of world do we want to live them, you know, leave them with, right? What has been missing? What can we learn from our current research that could continue to support children's healthy development? And to Cynthia's point, what kind of experiences should we expect teachers to provide, right? We want teachers to be sensitive and responsive, but what does that look like for child A versus child B, right? So I think that in many ways, we're trying to use our research as one form of providing information, but we also want to make sure that it's capturing the fullness of the different experts of child development. It can't just be those of us with a PhD basically saying we know the answer. We know that we have our own fallacy, our own biases, and our own perspectives.
And I want to touch on something you just said, because I feel like you really, like, as an educator, you really zoned in on it, is child A, child B. It is not a one size fits all. And we cannot be handed this checklist of how to work with children. And anybody who's worked with children knows that you show up with a checklist, you're not leaving with it. It is not going to happen. That child's going to laugh at you and be like, oh, okay, let's do this. Right? Like, children are, that's what makes them so beautiful, is that they are so unpredictable. But we have to be able to be adaptable with the different children we teach. So I love that you've touched on how the research is not going to be a one size fits all, because it can't be, because every child has a different background. So I love it. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I think the other factor about this, you know, you always think about the qualitative data or quantitative data. The qualitative data is going to be so impactful with this. The storytelling, right? Like, what does it mean when we're asking certain questions of families, of our staff that work in early childhood settings, about what they're experiencing? Because without the story that illuminates the what, right? Why did I answer it this way? What is occurring in my space and in my daily activity interactions, people will not understand what this or these data are telling us. So you gotta have both of those pieces, because there are just too many instances where we could dismiss this entire commitment, right? Or others could dismiss what we will find out from having a research agenda focused on racial equity, because they don't understand it, or they are wearing some other lens versus one that really is able to open up the door, open up their eyes, open up the windows, and examining what is happening to families in this particular space that either propels them into positive outcomes, whatever those may be, or is a hindrance to them moving into spaces in which they will thrive in their communities and into their, life and school, academic achievement and work life, et cetera, et cetera. But I that's what I'm really excited about, right? Those case studies and stories that will help us really understand what people are experiencing, and then, what would make it better, or how would it be, more aligned with something that would be positive, strength-based, rather than a negative expression of what's going on in communities.
Absolutely. And I'm going to ask a loaded question. In an ideal, absolutely perfect world, what would you like to come out from this research and data?
I'll go, because I'm not the researcher, so mine is just kind of like off the top of my head, right? Like, what I would like to see is changed awareness, attitudes, behaviors, and skills of the adults that are interacting with our children. And so that they are taking this seriously, and they have an understanding of what it means to operate from a space of anti-negativity. I'm just going to bundle it all together in that way, be it, anti-bias, anti-racism, or dismissive of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And so, if we were to be successful, people would take the time to slow down and understand what children and families are experiencing, and then map to that strategies that will help them to achieve and be successful.
I have no doubt this is going to be successful. Is every single person that works with children going to apply it? I would love to say yes, but if one educator reads it and applies it, well, they've just impacted the lives of hundreds of children that come through their program. So hopefully that trickle effect. And if one educator reads it, and that's for everybody listening, share what you've read with other people. That's how we improve early childhood education. Ioma, what is your wish for this research?
You know what? I mean, I have a lot of wishes, right? But I feel like my one big sort of moonshot goal is that I think this research makes what at least because race, right? That what many people think that we were post-racial here in the States here, that we're post-racial, but it makes it visible and visceral with the hope that it actually activates change, particularly for our young babies who, are they're feeling it, right? They may not have the words to sort of communicate it, but their bodies tell us this, their emotionality tells us this, right? And so for me, it's with the hope that the research could say, look, our babies deserve better, right? If we care for our children, we want to invest in their full selves, then we have to do that. So I hope that's what it does on one end. On the other end, I hope what it does do is that it takes away this sort of power and privilege we provided to research, right? As a researcher myself, right, I think it's important that we don't give all this power to research and say, you have the answer, lead us out of the tunnel. You are one of the answers. You are one of the vehicles, but we have to make sure that we understand that research and researchers, we have our own biases, our own experiences, and we have to make that very visible and clear, and knowing that we have made some really huge mistakes along the way that has harmed many, many people and still does today. And so I think my hope is that people can sort of see out the journey of the network and this research agenda, knowing that it may get attacked by, some misinformation, disinformation for sure, right? But that if you walk in conviction with your research, the answers will come forth, right? So my hope is really on the make sure we get what we need to make sure that children and families are fully humanized in a way that recognizes their spirit, their joy, but also their pain that we have caused. And at the other end, really addresses the larger research enterprise methodology that reminds us that humans are doing this work. And when humans are doing the work, it will be human, meaning there will be errors in that. And we have to sort of remember that. And so for those who may be color evasive, who want to sort of rewrite history, it doesn't change the fact of where we are, right? That we have Black children, for example, who are continually being excluded, whether physically thrown out or whether just ignored, and who they are ignored, or Latino children who are dealing with similar things, right? So for me, it's about how do we make sure that people see fully who kids and families are, but it's also how do we respond in a way that is healing, but also joyful and celebratory in sort of to be in that kind of space.
Love it. And I honestly, and I know that I'm being an optimist, but I will ride that to the bank. Like, I honestly and truly think that early childhood education is on, I think the word's precipice, like right on the tip of just going to that next level. Like, we have worked so hard to, you know, be treated like the professionals that we are, and we're taking our profession more seriously. We're starting podcasts, we're starting blogs, we're getting more active on Instagram and sharing the work that we do. And I honestly, we're there. Like, we are on the train. The train is on the tracks, and we are headed in the right direction.
I agree. Can I say before, Amanda, you say something, but I just want to lean into that moment and shameless plug, right? Colleagues and I released a book called We Are the Change We Seek, right? And part of it is really an ode to early educators, right? That you can wait and hope that, you know, the Congress fixes something and does something right, or your governor does something right. But in the end of it, you are the brain builders, right, of our children. You have power in your hands. And how do you activate that to say, if you want to go to work, have people go to work, if you want to open businesses, if you want to make sure that our children are ready to be the next military generals, the next president, the next engineer, that it starts today and not tomorrow. And to me, being able to say you could actually bring that power together and demand X, Y, and Z, right? So I think that is important that you know, people like you, right, with your, obviously you're learning the power of your words, of your advocacy, of your coalition, that the power is there, is how do you begin to activate it and also ensure that you hold people accountable who you're trying to activate, right? So for me, I think that to me, that's why I think researchers, we should be really behind you so that you could really hear some of what we learned, but you tell us, because you live in that space on a day-to-day basis. You experience the system. You experience the children and families. You are the central change agent in that space. And so to me, you are the power broker. And so how do you sort of lean into that? So I want to champion you for the work that you're leading and activating.
Thank you. There are incredible educators out there, but it can't be done without research. We are all in this together with the common goal of serving our children, right? And because we know that they are the future, not to sound corny, but they are. That's the end all and be all, right? And Amanda, what is your wish for all of this work that all of you are putting in?
So as if I could follow on those two responses, but my wish for the work of the Educare Learning Network's research agenda is that it results in information, both quantitative and qualitative information, that is early childhood professionals, families, advocates, and policymakers are able to access and receive in a way that it shifts mindsets, it lands on their heart, and it influences their behaviors, right? And does so in a way that really drives change at personal level, at an interpersonal level, in programmatic practices, and also in policy and systems change. And so in the end, I would like us to be able to say that we feel that the Educare Learning Network and its commitment to this research agenda and its in partnership with others in the early childhood field have really helped to shape that research enterprise in a way that empowers professionals and empowers families to be the change they seek.
Amazing. I love it. Honestly, thank you so much for the work that you do. And I feel, like I said, I am totally fangirling, more so now that we've done a podcast and we've talked about this, because you are just making such amazing headway in our industry. And for that, I am very grateful. And I'm very grateful that as a Canadian, I can bring that to my Canadian audience as well as globally across the world, because it's the only way we're all in this together, and it's the only way we're going to see change.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carla.